listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living. This is Eileen Dillon, your host. God is ever equal to your understanding. That's what the minister of a church I once belonged to reminded his parishioners. It meant that if you believed in a judging or a punishing God, you'd usually experience judgment or punishment. Or if you believed in a totally loving God, you'd experience love and so forth. The mother of today's guest believed in a helping God, so she asked for and often got help from God. She did this by petitioning him, writing her requests and hopes on scraps of paper which she carefully folded and put into her God box. With her God's assistance, she helped everyone, even the family dog. Her daughter and the rest of the family didn't know just how much help Mary Quinlan requested from God and Jesus and the saints until after she died. And what they found out is the subject of today's discussion on Full Power Living. Full Power Living is the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. Please interact with us on our chats on both the EmotionalPro.com page and the BlogTalkRadio.com/FPL for Full Power Living page. We also have a toll-free number, 800-630-7858. Well, who's Mary Lou Quinlan? She's written inspirational features for national magazines, including Real Simple, Oh, the Oprah Magazine, and more, and is the author of the books Just Ask a Woman, Time Off for Good Behavior, and What She's Not Telling You. The nation's leading expert on female consumer behavior and founder and CEO of the marketing consultancy Just Ask a Woman, she's conducted an in-depth research on women's lives since 1999 for corporations like Wells Fargo and Pfizer and Kellogg's. She's been the keynote speaker at hundreds of conferences around the world and has appeared on television programs like The Early Show, Good Morning America, The Today Show, and she's been profiled in numerous media outlets, including The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. You can find out more about her at MaryLouQ.com, and also about our topic today at TheGodBoxProject.com. Mary Lou and her husband Joe live in New York City and Bucks County, Pennsylvania, with their dog, Rocky. So, Mary Lou Quinlan, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen.
So, this month on Full Power Living, we're exploring issues of parenting and parent-child relationships. And I know that you and your mother had a very close relationship that lasted through to the end of her life and through the God box beyond. And you say that the most powerful female relationship begins with mother and daughter. What was your relationship with your mother really like?
Oh, my goodness. I loved her so much. She was my best friend. I even say she was my soulmate, which I know is a phrase usually reserved for couples, but we were so attuned in every way, our humor, our tears. It's as if we were one person sometimes.
Wow. That's really impressive. So, also, though, in your book, The God Box, you describe how your mother related warmly to others, and that's actually part of how your father met her, and I wondered if you'd start also by telling us how your parents met. I think it's a great story.
Sure. Well, my parents were born in Philadelphia, and it was during World War II in 1945, and my dad was on leave from the U.S. Army, and he was in Philadelphia at the time visiting his family, and he went down to the USO. My mom was hostessing at the USO, and my dad walked in, and he recalled the night so clearly to me. And my dad was very polite and reserved, like kind of witch hazel clean, you know what I mean? And he walked in and saw this radiant redhead who was giggling with her girlfriends, and he made a beeline for her and asked her to dance. And my mom said that she had been told as a hostess that you should never accept a ride home with a serviceman the first night you met him.
Uh-huh.
But she just felt that dad was such a tall, dark, handsome, kind man. She said yes, and it led to a romance, and they were married on June
11th, 1949. Wow. That gives me goosebumps for some reason.
Oh, well, it's even more so because I'll tell you, that was just the beginning. I mean, they were so in love that they had a motto for their marriage, which was always together, even in heaven. And Dad engraved it on a pendant that she wore her whole life. And, you know, Dad used to put rivets in his hats, like a cowboy hat or a baseball hat, and it would say, TGFM, thank God for Mary. I asked him when he was in his, like, late 80s, I said, do you have any regrets? And he said, I have none other than I wish I'd married Mary earlier.
Wow. Wow. That's so wonderful.
Real love story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they were married for many years, from 49.
Almost 57 years.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
57 years.
Wow. Now, we did a program once on couples who were married 50 years or longer, and one of the things that they characterized happens in those relationships that go on for a long while is, for example, that there's a very positive orientation, positive expectation, and secondly, that there's lots of little things that get done between the partners that keep the fires going. Was that true of their relationship?
Yeah, they had a couple of those little fires going. One of them was my dad used to save coins at the end of the day, and you know how you have pocket change, and he would drop it in an old wine bottle on his bureau, I think it was, and he called it the PAW fund, which meant POA fund, with the idea that when it hit $150 and we'd have to count up the coins, it had to be spent. Like, you couldn't keep saving and putting off the celebration. It was meant to celebrate their love, and they would go off for a night, you know, at a hotel or a little trip someplace, which was great. And the other thing they did, which I think was remarkable, is that they felt they couldn't wait for their anniversary to celebrate how much they loved each other. My father always said, never miss a chance to celebrate. And so they decided, and this was, I think, at their 25th anniversary, that from then on the 11th day of every single month of the year, they would celebrate their anniversary. They'd get cards. They'd say, oh, we can't talk today. It's our anniversary. And they'd be off to lunch or to dinner and candlelight and toasts. And it was just beautiful. They did that for all those years.
Oh, my gosh. That's really a... Wow. Okay, listen up, people.
Well, and they had another rule. Do not ever talk about the other person's family. That's another way to stay together.
Uh-huh. No matter what, huh?
Yeah.
The other thing that really stood out to me in the God box is your report that you and your brother Jack spoke to your mother almost every night by telephone wherever you were. I know for a number of years they were in Florida and you were in New Jersey? Is that where you were?
Jack was in New Jersey and I was in New York City.
Mm-hmm. You were in New York City. And how did that come to be that you called every night?
I have to give Jack credit for starting that tradition. I mean, I always was a frequent caller. And my mom called her own mother every night, so we had a good example from her. But Jack was, and for a, I don't mean to say sons are not as consistent as daughters, that wouldn't be fair. But generally, you know, you find the daughter's the one. And Jack called every night, and that got me into the can't miss a night. And so for years and years and years, we both would call. And no matter where we were, and there'd be that stray night when it's a thunderstorm and you're running into a meeting or a restaurant because I was working crazy, and I would still say, I'm sorry, I have to step outside, and I would call her, even if it was just to say, I can't really talk, but I just want to tell you I love you. And I think that's so important to have those daily touch points with the person who just loves you best.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people would not look forward to talking with their parents, and I kept looking for what was it that your mother did that would encourage that, and the way that you describe her, she was highly supportive, she was non-judgmental, she wasn't controlling, she was supporting you in your life. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I'd say that's a great description. I mean, I would say she had our back, and it was no matter what happened in our day, Mom was listening, interested, encouraging. If a disappointment came our way, she was the one to say, it's going to be better tomorrow. It's just as well that didn't happen. It wasn't meant to be. And wait till you see the next one you're going to get, it'll be better. You know, so if there's someone that you could talk to every night who said, I'm on your side, I love you no matter how life comes, and I will always be there for you no matter what happens, wouldn't you make that phone call?
Yeah, I get it now. but her doing that is in part, again, as I understand it, what led to the use of the God box, because your mother had, I mean, like all of us, if we have concern for somebody, we tend to carry that concern with us. And she took on so many people, talked with so many people, had concern for so much that she really couldn't carry it. And that's how she got the God box started. Is that accurate?
That's true. Because when and you know, the idea of carrying worries, we all do that, you know, and I do it all the time. And I know in Mom's case, for a long time, she started to carry them in a way that was even hard on her. You know, she'd keep, the person would tell her the problem, like, I can't get a job, or my husband's mean to me, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
The person would feel relieved after talking to Mom, and they'd go off on their happier way, while Mom would be, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to her? I'm so worried, and be sending her cards and trying to figure out how to help. And that's why the God box became an incredibly invaluable tool for her to be able to place those worries someplace where they might be resolved.
So, what is the God box?
Well, I'll describe the God box as my mother kept it. She said, you take any old box, and in her case it was any old box. There were some really raggedy boxes. and you take a box and also any piece of paper. And the reason she said it is that worries and wishes come up all day long, and you don't want to make it hard to take care of them. So she'd grab whatever was handy. It could be a receipt out of her purse. It could be a prescription, the back of something. Even I found an old paper towel. And she would write, she'd date it, Dear God, state the concern. Please let so-and-so be better in the hospital. Love, Mary, and fold the piece of paper and put it into her God box. Close the lid and surrender.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's so sweet.
Yeah, it is, and she did it. She's, when we'd be on the phone with her saying, oh, gosh, this was a rough day, she'd say, I'll put it in the God box. And, of course, the God box, it came with a rule. That was my favorite because as little, not little kids, we were adult little whiners, I guess, my brother and I would say, oh, but I don't know. Do you think I'm still going to get that? Or am I going to pass the test or whatever the heck it would be? And Mom would say, you know what? I put it in the box, but if you're going to keep bringing that up, because you think you can handle it better than God, it is coming out of the box. And that was pretty much the way we clammed up and gave it over.
So now looking at that as an issue of faith, my understanding is that one of the lessons everybody has to learn here on earth is about faith. And I'm not necessarily talking about a religious faith, but the kind of faith it takes to put your head on the pillow at night and believe that you're going to wake up the next day or that there's going to be a day, right? Mm-hmm. So your mother was really challenging your faith. If you're going to allow her to put your petition in the God box, then you have to have enough faith to let the God box do its work. You can't continue to carry it. That's the way I would understand that.
Yes, and to believe, to trust, to give it over to God's hands and know that whatever decision, it's not about getting what you want, it's about accepting the decision that's right for you and believing that God will lead you to where you're meant to go. And she taught us that. Mm-hmm. I do believe that.
Now, this begins to make your mother sound like a very pious Mother Teresa type person, and as we're talking, it creeps back in my head that you make the statement in the God box that your mother worked at dozens of corporations, and I'd like to have you talk about how, when your mother was working for temp agencies, she handled herself on the job allowed her to get to the dozens.
Mom would fall on the floor laughing at the idea that she was pious, by the way, and I maybe have painted her that way by picturing her as just so loving and kind, because with us, we were number one. Everybody else, get in line. When she worked. My mom loved to work. And she'd come home and tell us all the gossip of the day and all that kind of stuff. But she, if she took an assignment and she didn't like it, she'd call my dad at like 10:30 in the morning, and she'd be on the phone whispering like, "Ray, you have to come pick me up." And he'd say, "What?" And she goes, "I'm not going back. These people aren't nice." And if they weren't nice, that was it. She quit right there on the spot. She would not come back at lunchtime. And she had like 30 jobs because she just would not tolerate letting her life be dribbled away. There's always going to be another, you know, of course, maybe the economy was different in the 50s or 60s, but as a temporary assistant, she could get jobs one after the other. And she'd just say, "I'm not letting my life slip by into the hands of a bunch of crappy people."
Wow. I just think that's so wonderful. I think that works regardless of how the economy goes, really. I wonder what the world would be like if all of us decided that we're not going to let our lives be in the hands of crappy people. You know, that'd be different, wouldn't it?
Oh, my gosh. We'd be changing jobs a lot.
Yeah, changing jobs, all kinds of things, schools, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you knew that she had a God box because she talked about it and she told you she was putting things in it. But I was interested to realize that you didn't know where she kept it until after her death.
Yeah, well, you know, she showed it over the years. Every once in a while, I always visited them in Florida every month, and that's where they retired, to Fort Myers. And every once in a while, Mom would say, "Hey, let's take a look in this God box." And she'd bring it out from wherever and start pulling out pieces of paper, and it'd be funny. Like, she'd have stuff in there like, "Please get rid of so-and-so who worked with me." You know, if somebody was mean to me, you know, get them fired. Or so that's what I'm saying. She was not, everything wasn't all sugar. But anyway, I knew that she had it and that she kept track of it. But she never did say where she kept them. And I remember the day after she died, and when my brother said, "Where's Mom's God box?" The first thing I did was like look around the living room, because I had given her God boxes over the years, and I could see a couple of them, the pretty ones, like a stained glass one and a pretty wooden one. And I started opening the lids, and of course they're empty because she thought they were too pretty to use as God boxes. They were decorations. And so I just fished around in her room, in her drawers and the shelves, and eventually found in her closet the treasure that I was going to find.
I love that. And the other thing was the format that she used, which I find charming. And in the God box, you have pictures of the scraps of paper and the petitions and so forth. But it was like she's talking to her friend or someone she's working with or something like that, like, "Dear God" or "Dear Jesus, this is what's happening and here's what I'd like. If it's right for them, you know, thanks very much." And signed her name Mary, right?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, it was so informal. There was one I loved where she must have been starting up a shopping list, and she had Advil written on it, and it was one of those little papers, "You're so special," you know, you get a pad of paper. She took it, crossed out the Advil, and then just starts writing, "Dear God, you know, please help with the insurance on the Mazda. Let them know it was caused by towing. Love, Mary." Now, I know the story of that because she and Dad hit a deer with the car that belonged to my husband Joe and I one night. And so in the towing of the car, the tow truck had dinged it up, and they wouldn't the State Farm wouldn't cover it. So here's Mom, you know, using her old shopping list to write to God to say, "Yo, you know, how about calling up the insurance company and tell them it's not our fault?" I just loved it. It was the way you would talk to a friend on the phone. That's how she was, so intimate and informal. Really neat.
There's a person in my family, he's in his 80s now, and he's very connected through his religion to something that's larger than he is. And I got this idea with your mother, too. It becomes such a part of the person that there's no separation. You know, this is my spiritual life, this is my regular life. There's no separation. This is my experience here as a person on the earth with a spiritual nature. Would you say that so of your mother? That was so?
I would, and it was part of her personality. She was very comfortable saying to whomever, "You're in my God box," and she didn't give a whole lecture about what that meant. She didn't expect them to take it in any religious way, one way or the other. It was just that my spirit is here to figure how I can help. And some of the notes, she even wrote at the end, like, of the note to God, like, maybe she had, you know, she had a blood cancer for a long time, and she would write, please help me be well so I can help other people. She really felt that was her mission on earth, was was to love and help other people. And so she'd ask for help for that reason, not just selfishly.
Uh-huh. Wow. And that's not only true of why she was here on the... I mean, even after she wasn't here on the earth, she was still helping people, as you so kindly note in your book. It's really, really nice to hear. We're up to our first break, Mary Lou. We're talking with award-winning marketer Mary Lou Quinlan, who's author of 4 books, including the latest, The God Box. We'll have more about what else was in The God Box when we return here on Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week, on the 24th of May, we continue this month-long exploration of parenting with internationally known expert Steve Siskold, who's author of What's Your Body Telling You? He's going to be talking with us about how parents and kids can work together to help children learn what their body is telling them. And as always in our discussions, you'll also glean information about how you can listen to your own body that can assist you in your personal growth. Later in the month, we're sharing some tips on how to raise those incredible kids when life coach Dakey Fox interviews me as I talk about redefining the job of parenting and how I actually did raise children who've created success after success in their adult lives, regardless of the challenges. We're exploring new angles that can help you, whether you're a parent or the child of a parent. Be sure to check our upcoming guests at the top of the radio show page at emotionalpro.com. We also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Talk with us right now, toll free at 800-630-7858, or post your comment or question on our chats. And if you miss us live or want to share our show with your friends and family, you can download archived podcasts or subscribe to iTunes for Full Power Living. Now, our guest today is Mary Lou Quinlan. You can find her at MaryLouQ.com and also at TheGodBoxProject.com. So, Mary Lou, you're a leading expert on women. as well as the author of several books and articles about women, like your books, Just Ask a Woman, What She's Not Telling You, and Time Off for Good Behavior. And I got very curious about what has caused you to get interested in positioning yourself as the go-to person about what women really want and what they want to hear from people who are trying to sell things to them, and other things about women, like why women may tend to tell half-truths. How did you get interested in this?
Well, that's really been an entire career interest. I've had a career for, gosh, now 37 years, and I started at Avon Products. I was there for 10 years, all focused on the Avon representatives and what made them sell and feel good about themselves, and then was in the advertising agency world, and there I found that as one of the few senior women at the time, that the men in advertising were really more excited about the car accounts and the beer accounts, and I guess they call, you know, would think of them as the cool accounts. And I tended to get the female accounts, and so I was working on Jergens and Clairol and brands like that. And I just loved working on the brands where women were the customers. And by the time the late 90s rolled in, it was clear that women had surpassed by far men when it came to being the more influential buyer. The statistic is that women buyer influence 85% of everything that's sold. And
wow.
At that point, I decided to really pivot in my career and focus entirely on understanding women, and that's what I've done for the last 13 years.
Wow. So when I shared this with somebody at dinner last night, they said, so what are the main things? What do women look for? So can you take a minute to tell us about that?
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, women, if I were to say the simplest thing, it would be good to be listened to. Women know that they are powerful, but they so often don't feel that the brands that want their business or the retailers who want their time are listening to what they need when it comes to customer service, when it comes to products that make promises that are true and that really perform. Women are looking for as much information as is available. They are incredible researchers, especially with the internet and so many tools at their disposal now to get the best deal possible. And women want to be respected as far as what particular needs they may have for product and service, and they don't like being overlooked. And unfortunately, it happens too often. I've had so many women, for instance, talk about the dealer experience, car dealer, and they'll walk in with their husband, and it's their purchase, their money, and yet somehow, sometimes the dealer seemed to focus all on the guy, even when she's saying, but it's me, you know. They're not even addressing her questions. And so women are on to this and lately have started to take matters into their own hands, even, you know, suing some companies for saying, really, you're not listening to me? Listen to this. So
wow.
It's pretty exciting times for women.
Wow. I had an experience years ago. I married quite young, and I went to a workshop with my husband. He was a social worker, and it was a growth workshop that spouses were invited to. And at lunchtime, the group talked about where should we go to eat our brown bag lunches, and I made a suggestion that the group took. But after people finished their eating, they started moving around and relating to one another, and several people walked up to the bench where my husband and I were sitting and thanked him for the suggestion. And it really angered me, which he didn't know anything to do about. But years later, I realized that it had to do with me and my power, that I was not fully enough in my power for other people to see me.
Well, you're being a hard judge on yourself at the same time. I would say that many women are listening to you saying, that has happened to me a million times. I've seen it, and I feel even when I was, you know, running businesses and running companies, and you're around the table, and you say an idea, and the response is like, and then it goes down the line, and 3 minutes later, some guy says the exact same thing, and all of a sudden, it's the best idea since sliced bread. And you know, do you say, hey, glad you liked my idea and supported it, or do you let it fly? So probably that's where the power part comes in, is to assert, you know what, I had this idea, and it was a good idea, and so I'm glad you're going for it. But I don't know why. Women's voices don't seem to assert through the din.
That's exactly what happened. I was in a therapy group with about 15 people, and I'd suggest something, and it would be poo-pooed, and 2 minutes later somebody else, often a man, would say it. And I did finally, because I was in a therapy group, say, what the heck is going on here? And that's when I realized that I wasn't standing behind. Now, you know, so we have both a cultural approach and a personal approach, and that worked for me to learn to stand behind myself and insist, you know, if I'm going to say something, I'm going to be part of this. You're going to listen, just like your mother did when she said, if you're going to let me put this in the God box, you better stand behind it, you know? That's really great.
Yeah. But, you know, there have been studies about men and women and how they communicated, and women use many, many more words than men.
Right.
Something like 7,000 words a day to a man's 2,000, because we tend to tell the story sometimes in context to give the picture, and men are like, get to the point. So some of that can break down the listening as well.
Uh-huh. Now, let's talk about the range of the petitions that you found. When your mother passed away and you did find the God box, you talk about it as the God box, but there really were 10.
That was the shocker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was the range of the types of things that you found in the God box, the types of things that concerned your mother?
Well, it really ranged, I don't want to say from the sublime to the ridiculous, but it kind of did. I mean, as an example, you know, you see this treasure trove, as I think of it, and there were 10 boxes with 20 years of everything she ever prayed for on behalf of us, friends, strangers, everyone. So you're pulling them out, and alongside each other, I could find something serious, like my mom praying for a miracle or a cure to her own cancer, alongside, dear God, please let the Pergo floor be the right choice, love, Mary. And that was, you know, a flooring that was being put into my house. She didn't want Dad to have chosen the wrong thing. It was the little things and the big things. It was asking for something as simple as a meeting that I was having, that it would be successful. And then she would ask for this fellow, Leo, please let Leo pass his driver's test. You know, Leo was 90. It was her neighbor. It's just so great. You know, everything went in the box, big and small. That's what makes it so charming, that it's, it isn't just, I hate to say, life and death. That was certainly in there. But there was a lot of just day-to-day.
Uh-huh. And some of the people that she petitioned on behalf of, you never heard of before. They're people she met in other places in her life. Is that not so?
That's true. I mean, I can tell that it might be, you know, please take care of Marissa Marie. She's just a little baby, had a heart condition. I'm sure it was someone's great-granddaughter, you know, in Florida. I don't know who that is. I knew so many of my mom's friends, so to see these names I've never heard of and never will know just tells me that she was responding to people she met in the checkout line, or, you know, neighbors that were not close friends but that she cared about.
Well, because of the range, you can't know for sure, but those petitions that your mother put in there that had to do with your family, what percentage of them roughly got responded to? What percentage turned out okay? Have you looked at
that's
it that
a really
way?
Interesting question. Well, some of them couldn't turn out okay. If I were to say what percentage did, I'd probably say, I'll bet 75% did.
Wow.
That's what I would say if I had a guess, because a lot of them had to do with my brother's career and mine, and making decisions on selling houses or moves or vacations that were safe. You know, so as I look back on those, I think, wow, a lot of them did come through. The ones that didn't and really perhaps couldn't, she recovered. Like, my dad had a stroke, and it affected his speech. And Mom's petition was, please help Ray recover his speech 100%. Now, she did everything she could to help with that, believe me. She drilled him on language, and my father was not the most cheerful student of speech therapy. It was annoying to him because he had a beautiful vocabulary, and it just irritated him, you know, that he couldn't get the word that he was searching for. Mm-hmm. But Mom never gave up asking or trying, you know. Mm-hmm. So that couldn't be fixed. My brother woke up one day, and his hearing had gone from one ear. And it was, you know, you hear a little bit, but, and we never did figure it out. And Mom was praying for a complete miracle. In fact, in that case, she pulled out all the guns because she wrote something like, "Dear God, Mary, Joseph, Teresa, and Mother Catherine Drexel, or St. Catherine Drexel, if you prefer." You know, she just, "I will ask everyone to get Jack his hearing back." Uh-huh. And it did not recover fully. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, in the Catholic Church, I remember at my son's wedding, I misplaced my husband's keys to the car for him. And and in the cleanup, he was kind of getting to the edge of panic, and my sister-in-law...
Oh, I bet I know what he did. Go ahead.
No, my sister-in-law, who was raised in the Catholic Church, started praying to a particular saint who helps find keys, and she found them. And your mother did that, too. There were different... Who were some of the different saints she would petition?
Well, St. Anthony is the one who finds things, and I have to tell you, I pray to St. Anthony all the time, and it really does work. And whether it's St. Anthony who retrieves the keys or the act of stopping to pause and ask instead of scrambling like a crazy person to find something allows your brain to recall where it was, whichever it is, I'm all for it. So St. Anthony, he's in charge of finding things. St. Joseph, he is the saint that many people believe will help you sell real estate. So, for instance, if someone is trying to sell their house and they're stuck, Mom would say, and I've heard other people say it back to me in the audience, that you take a little St. Joseph statue and you go out front of your house and bury him upside down in the dirt in the lawn, and your house will sell.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know that sounds like superstition and, you know, a kid-like thing to say, but I think it's more about why not ask and believe that maybe you're not in charge and it's not so much the little statue in the dirt did it, but I think your faith in believing that the right answer will come does lead to that.
Yes.
And then
well,
the Blessed Mother, that was another one. She put her in the window to make it be sunny.
Uh-huh. So my learning is that what you believe is what you create in your life. So
I agree.
I think that a lot of people have different vehicles. You don't necessarily have to use a particular saint or a particular religion or anything like that, but the mechanism of I have faith, I have this belief that things will turn out, that is the key. And it, I found it very charming the way your mother, I mean, there's something very simple about just saying, look, we're having a tough time here. Could you help, please? Thanks a lot. You know?
And that's exactly the tone of voice that she took. And I do believe what you say is that where your intentions are, where your belief is, that you are setting yourself on, I really wish we could work this out, and you take steps on your own. You know, action steps to help something work out. But at some point, you do let your heart and your belief take over. And that's what Mom taught me.
That's really great. Sometimes she put petitions in the God box that you didn't really know about and were surprised to find later. For example, in the book you reveal that you had some fertility issues and you were working to take medication and so forth, and you didn't really tell anybody, including your mother, about it, and yet later you found her with petitions saying, please let Mary Lou have a baby.
Yes. My mom, unlike perhaps many moms, never nagged me about grandchildren. She never said, when are we going to have a grandchild? You know, and we were married. I was, you know, 24. Joe was 25. And it wasn't until we were in our mid to late 30s that we decided that we would, you know, really seriously try and learned that we needed some intervention. And, you know, I didn't tell Mom because I never wanted to disappoint her. You know, I didn't want her to think something was wrong. I didn't want her to worry that I was, you know, taking the shots you have to take. It's a terrible process. I would never wish this fertility kind of stuff on anyone. It's very discouraging and hard. And so I just didn't lay that on her because I just never wanted her to worry. And she wouldn't put on me her expectation, like, gee, it would be nice if you had a child. She would always say, you guys are great. You have such a good life. You're so free. And this is from a woman who loved being a mother, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so to find in her God box that little piece of paper where she wrote, "Please, if it's right, a child for Mary Lou and Joe," was so revealing and touching to me that she didn't put it on me. She just gave it over to God to make the decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful. Well, we're up to our second break, and that phrase, "if it's right," I would like to talk with you about that because I think that's a key phrase, and I noted that it showed up many times in your mother's petitions. So can we talk about that when we come back?
Absolutely.
All right. So we're talking today with Mary Lou Quinlan, author of The God Box. Her mother, Mary Quinlan, petitioned God about some very important issues that she faced, and yet she didn't tell her family some things that were very important. She kept them between her and God. Let's find out more about what those messages were about when we returned. You're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. All right, we're back here on Full Power Living, talking with award-winning marketer, provocative speaker, and best-selling author Mary Lou Quinlan, the nation's foremost authority on women. Mary Lou, before I stop in the last segment, I asked you about those words, "if it's right." What do you think your mother meant by that, and why did she so often put it in her petitions?
Mom really believed that the decision was God's, not hers, and that God would make a decision that was what was meant to be in her life, even if it was a no. A disappointing no. It didn't mean she didn't continue to ask, but that was more, I think, just to keep presenting her hope. Mom didn't think that just because she wanted something to happen, it was necessarily the right thing. And so she put that in God's hands, his decision, not hers.
And, you know, that's something that really stood out to me. The most powerful message in your book, The God Box, is about the power of a person's relationship with that which is bigger than the self, which we could call God or the Great Spirit or Allah. And when a person has a full faith that something larger cares and wants to help, there's a lot of assurance, I think, and balance, and it enables that strong flow of love we've been talking about. And I believe that message was conveyed by your mother and comes through you in the writing of the book to me, the reader, that relating to something that's larger with ourselves gives us a kind of strength that we can't get otherwise.
That's true. It's a calming feeling. I think that when something turns out differently than you expected, and yet you accept that that's what was meant to be, in our family, that meant, okay, so now what? And we'd move on to the next goal or the next step, the next hope, as opposed to looking backwards with regrets. I think that when people have high expectations and it doesn't work out, then they spend too much time looking over their shoulder, why not? And that's not what God has decided, and so that's the way we think. So we move on to the next step.
So you say, okay, well, that's the way it was for this time. How are we going to adjust to how things turned out and move? The end of this program, we have a tagline to pay attention to what you want, not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you practicing that principle.
That's a beautiful, beautiful phrase. I mean, I feel that in my own life, thanks to Mom, when I was diagnosed with an early stage breast cancer, I really spent very little time in the why me category. You know, why did this have to happen? Oh no. And I showed up for the first day of radiation with my hair blown out, and I just thought, I am going to make this happen. And I decided, my little slogan was, I will become radiant, not radiated. And I, day by day, I did everything I could to be with friends, to buy flowers, to show up on time, to keep myself healthy. And I just said, I will come out of this better than I went in. And it was a state of mind, but I think it was also the lessons taught by Mom, to accept this was meant to be, and now you are going to figure out what that will mean for your life and how to go forward.
Well, I just love your intention was to go forward. I love that. Now, but that kind of highlights, now, as you mentioned, your mother was ill for a long time, and she was in a lot of distress or pain, and yet she petitioned the God box and didn't let her family know the extent of her suffering.
That's true. I mean, my dad and my brother and I knew, and I feel like I knew quite a bit, because if you pictured our family, you haven't met them. My dad was somebody who always said, "You're not sick. It's just a little cold. It'll be gone tomorrow." That was him. Like, he didn't want us to be sick. He wanted us to be well. So in that case, Mom felt that he was not the most sympathetic, even though he was the most loving. When it came to illness, he couldn't stand her being sick. He wanted her to be better. It just killed him to watch her suffer. So because of that, she tended not to tell him as bad as it got, because she thought it made him feel terrible. Then my brother is a very great guy, but he's also like, okay, tomorrow will be good, you know. I was probably more attuned to the day-to-day of the effects of the infusions, the transfusions, the drugs, the mouth sores. Mom had a lot of this. And so she did tell me, but I have to say, reading the God box, I realized just how difficult it really was for her day by day, because she could reveal her entire complaints, pain, fears to the God box, but she did not tell her sister. She didn't tell her neighbors. I mean, when we had the funeral, people were like, Mary had what? 20 years. But she just kept an outside attitude of, I'm fine, because she didn't want people worrying about her or treating her like there was something wrong.
Yeah, I really relate to that. I was talking with my husband recently about that, that if something is going awry with me, I don't want other people's energy, particularly their negative energy, to be coming in on top of it. I want to keep it more pure, and that's what I relate to in that statement about Mary.
Good point. And, you know, there's nothing worse. I know this, having gone through the breast cancer, which to me is like, okay, thankfully it's off my plate right now, and I hope forever. People will say, how are you? You know, that doesn't help one single bit. I'm like, what? Why are you asking me? Do I not look well? And I know it's meant out of caring, but really you need positive energy, period, end of sentence.
Now, if people end up going to the godboxproject.com, they're going to find out that what we're talking about here is not just a book. It's a virtual community. It's an app. It's a play. Tell us about the God Box Project.
Well, the idea of the God Box Project is, this is probably my biggest motivation, other than naturally honoring a mother I loved with all my heart, and that's spreading the story of the idea of the God Box that she tried to do in her own life to help other people. And in doing it, also not doing it as a money maker. I'm taking all the proceeds and donating them to cancer and hospice care. Both my parents suffered from cancer, and hospice was a great ally at the end. And in some cases, locally, they've asked me to donate it to a family cause, and I've done that as well. So the book and the play are very actively on the road right now, particularly in the fall. The play will appear more often. And it's a one-act, one-woman play that I perform, which takes the story to a whole bigger, dramatic, funnier, and sadder level, but as a way to connect with people live. And they can put, at the end of the play, their messages into a God box if they choose. And the dollars are then donated to the local cause. And the community idea is, you know, to let people start to experiment and experience this. So soon we'll have an online ability on the website where you can write your prayer if you choose. And also iTunes has in their possession our app, which is developed, and I'm looking forward to its release. And that'll be free for iTunes users and iPhone users, so they can have their God box on the go.
Wow, that's really great. Now, that's very interesting, this whole issue of asking for help. One of the major lessons, like when my son, who's now 34, when he was 11, he broke both of his arms within 3.5 weeks of each other.
Oh,
and it was after a rather distressing encounter he had with his father, who later we learned was suffering from bipolar disorder. I tried to help him. I'm a therapist. I tried to help him with his upset, but it didn't work. Now, my son has a godmother who's a medium, and he went to her after he'd broken both of his arms, and he said, "What am I trying to teach myself?" And she said, "You don't ask for help. If you had asked for help right after the incident that you had with your father, you wouldn't have had to break either one of your arms." And so he immediately that night started asking for help. And the long and short of it is he got some assistance from various people and locations that allowed him to heal faster by about 2 or 3 weeks than had been projected. So this issue, your mother, one thing she demonstrates over and over again is she was great at asking for help, and most of us are not. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, because I am not. My mother was so good at it, did it every day. And, you know, it's funny, I'm listening to your story about your son, and the first year after Mom died, it sounds weird to say, I started falling down. And I fell in the street. I sprained one ankle, then I sprained another ankle. I fell in the apartment, had 7 stitches in my eyebrow. I was like, what is happening to me? And I realized how much I kept inside of having lost Mom. And I really had no one. I used to ask her, you know, without her, I just didn't make the leap of either the God box or just praying more or something. And it really wasn't until I was sitting at my dad's bedside, he was dying of brain and kidney cancer, and he was in hospice in my home, that I hit that point of, I can't fix this. And I wrote my first message into the God box, praying to God and Mom to please take him home. And that was really the first time I could remember saying, you know, little miss, do it all, fix it all. You cannot handle this by yourself.
Yes. You know, years ago I dated a man who was independently wealthy, and he was writing a book. And we lived quite a distance apart, and I was a single mom. I couldn't see him very often, so we talked on the phone a lot. And every day he would say to me, "Oh, I had a good day today. I asked my guides to help me with the writing, and the writing went so well." And finally I said to him, "Wait a minute, who are these people you're asking?" You know, and he said, "Well, you know, some people believe in guides, and I just asked them, and they helped me." And I said, "You mean you're asking people you can't see for help, and you get it? I can't even ask people I can see for help." And he said, "Well, try it, you know." So I waited, of course, like you were talking about, until my back was up against the wall with something, and I said, "Please, please help me, I need help." And I got what you describe in your book, which is an immediate sense of peace and calm that you felt came because you connected with your mother when you did the God Box petition, correct?
I did. I felt her hand on mine. And I don't mean to be kind of spooky or anything like that. I just mean that I really had the sense that we had an expression between us, hands-on, which was our way of putting our hands on the receiver at the end of those nightly phone calls and saying, hands-on, and it meant we're always together, we're never apart. And I really felt as if her hand was on mine saying, now you understand. You've just let it go for the first time. It wasn't the writing down. It was the letting go. And it was profound for me, and I felt the sense of peace and not the desperate daughter at the bedside thinking, help, don't leave me, Daddy. Instead, it was, I understand that it's in your hands.
Uh-huh. And so would you say that was the most profound thing you've learned from your mother's God box about letting go?
Yes. That it doesn't, that you can ask, that you ought to ask as often as you can. And the asking, it's not just asking, but then emotionally letting yourself give it over, surrender, let go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've really been trying to do that just with the daily things in my life, not just the big ones. But things go wrong. It's like, okay, that's the way it went. I did all I could. It didn't work out. Next. What's next? Mm-hmm. That was what was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I've garnered along the way is that help that isn't asked for never works. So that it's important to ask because, at least by my understanding, the forces that be, God, your higher self, your guides, however anybody looks at this, they can't help unless you ask. And so I think that's a really key thing, and also it enables you to do that internal letting go. It's a profound message from your book.
Yeah.
Well, Mary Lou, I really like your writing. I want to tell you that. I enjoyed reading your book, The God Box, and I want to thank you for taking the time to go through all those little pieces of paper and sharing them with us. I know a lot of people are going to get a lot from what you've done, and your mother's influence will be big in the world, bigger than probably she ever petitioned for.
Wouldn't that be wonderful, Eileen? Thank
wouldn't
you
that
for
be great?
Listening and for having taken such a thoughtful approach to it. I really have enjoyed talking with you.
Great. Well, thank you for realizing what a treasure you had and then sharing it. I want to remind people to go to either MaryLouQ.com or TheGodBoxProject.com for more and to learn about the app when it comes out and so forth. Thank you so much for being with us here on Full Power Living today, Mary Lou.
Thank you, Eileen.
All right.
Here.
All right. Next week on May 24th, I'll be talking with Steve Siskold about how important it is to help children learn to listen to what their body is telling them and how to do it. Join us live on May 24th and every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Thank you, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, our show's producer. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.